This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We record in the offices of Raider Solutions in the Light Center in Lafayette. Raider's team lets you focus on your business while they take care of the technology. If you're wondering if Raider can help your business with any and all technology needs, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'd like to thank Iberia Bank for its support of this podcast. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered right here in Lafayette, with 329 combined locations throughout the South. They offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Visit iberiabank.com for more information. We're also grateful for the support of Lafayette General Health. As Acadiana's largest nonprofit, community-owned regional health system, Lafayette General is committed to restoring, maintaining, and improving health in the communities it serves. For more information, visit LafayetteGeneral.com. Dr. Holly Bofi is our guest today. Holly serves as Vice President and District 7 member of the Louisiana Board of Elementary and Secondary Education, representing District 7 here in Southwest Louisiana. Holly founded EdTalents, which provides education consulting. She previously spent 10 years teaching middle school and was named the Louisiana State Teacher of the Year in 2010. And Holly, Dr. Bofi, I should say.
Oh, call me Holly.
Thank you. It's going to be a lot easier. I'm so excited to have you on the show because education is a cause near and dear to my heart, and I love Louisiana, as I know you do.
Yes.
So would you share your background first about how you ended up being an elected BSEE board member and what led you to want to serve our state?
Sure. Well, I taught 8th grade social studies here in Lafayette at Paul Breaux, and through that process learned about what BSEE mm-hmm. even was. I think that most people don't even necessarily know what BSEE is, but
right.
It's the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education. It was created with the 1974 Constitution, and we've only had three members on BSEE from our area because the other individuals who served before me served for such long periods mm-hmm. of time. So I think that's one reason why it's a little known office or position here. So I taught 8th grade social studies and would teach students about Louisiana, and that included our history, our government, economics, and our culture. And so I would tell my students, one day you're going to be able to vote for me for BSEE. And I don't know what it is.
Shameless.
It's not like I thought about it. But I ended up mm-hmm. being in a position to run for BSEE. I think it's a lot about what we speak into our lives. And so when I was the State Teacher of the Year, mm-hmm. I was able to interact with a lot of people who felt like I did that our system should do more to serve all kids. And so as a beginning teacher, I realized pretty quickly that I wasn't being set up for success and my students weren't being set up for success. And that was a very difficult aspect of my career to encounter because you want everyone to be successful.
How did you come to that conclusion though? Like what are you talking about?
Looking into the eyes of my students, mm-hmm. I mean, I started in Baton Rouge at an inner city. I had kids from an inner city mm-hmm. population, many who had parents who were incarcerated, mm-hmm. Many who had parents who didn't have successful elementary and
yeah.
secondary education mm-hmm. experiences. Right. They hadn't graduated. And so I knew that our system needed to do more if our children were going to be successful. So I think parents send us the best version of their kids that they have mm-hmm. with the greatest intentions. And I think it's up to us as a system to deliver whatever services are necessary to help students to be successful.
Yeah.
And it's just a realization. I got there and thought, there's only so much as an individual mm-hmm. teacher that I can bring to the table, and that my students were bringing their best every day, but we needed more in order for them to mm-hmm. be successful. And so looking at them and understanding what their future was going to hold was very disheartening. And so I think it is upon us to give children as many opportunities as possible to be successful early on. I hear people talk about well, it's the parenting, right? It's not the education the children have, but it's the parenting. And my pushback on that is we have the next generation of parents in our schools. And if we can provide them opportunities that will result in a successful life, now they have to make it happen, right? Mm-hmm. But if we can provide opportunities that lead them to success in their life, then they are going to be able to provide more for their children. And so I think as educators, we should be doing everything we possibly can to close gaps. And so I, you know, after I was chosen as Teacher of the Year and started to encounter people who felt this way and people mm-hmm. who have a vision for Louisiana not being in the, you know, low bottom. 40s, yeah. the bottom anymore. And no, I don't want to be 49th forever. And I feel like I've been given certain opportunities in my life that I can contribute to us climbing the ladder. And that's why I ran.
Right. I know you got 3 degrees from LSU, right? Your background has always been education.
Yes. I went a traditional route to be mm-hmm. a teacher. I actually had a semester here at UL, but my boyfriend at the time, my boyfriend at the time, who's my husband now, started at LSU. And so I followed him there. And there was a program that I was able to get my master's in my fifth year that I think was a difference maker in my career. Mm-hmm. So I was already thinking about education differently when I started my first year as a teacher, and then was able to go and get another degree while I was there. Mm-hmm. One of the best perks about being the State Teacher of the Year was that I was able to get my doctorate on scholarship.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So that's something that I I finished in 2015.
What a gift.
It is an amazing gift. It was an amazing perk. And actually, I'm glad that I didn't know that mm-hmm. because I probably would have tried too hard, right? Yeah. I would have messed it up in the process. So that was an incredible blessing. And something that I think has just given me more opportunities to mm-hmm. study and mm-hmm. think about, you know, what is it that we can do so that we do better by our teachers and leaders and better by our children.
Right. Well, since you've talked about that, would you explain what Bessie does?
Yes.
What do you guys do? There's 11 of you.
Yes.
Yeah.
There are 11 of us. 8 of us are elected from mm-hmm. regions across the state. It's the old congressional district. So when we had 8 members in Congress, mm-hmm. though, it would have been the congressional district. And so 3 are appointed by the governor. And so the outcome of the governor's election is really important to the makeup of our board. So the 11 of us are responsible for setting statewide policy. We are the ones who determine the funding formula. It's called the Minimum Foundation Program, mm-hmm. the MFP. We establish the funding formula, send it to the legislature, and the legislature can vote it up or down. Mm-hmm. Many people know that this year we were successful in increasing teacher pay. Mm-hmm. I think not enough. I still don't think our teachers are going to be compensated for the work that they do, but we are increasing teacher pay this year, which is something that's exciting. In addition to the MFP, we established the formula for the school letter grades. And so each fall, you'll see the school letter grades.
Like ranking of that school, like what the grade it gets.
The grade that schools get, yes. And as a matter of fact, I really want to encourage people to go to louisianaschools.com and learn more about their school. We've done a lot in recent years to be more transparent in what's going on in schools. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited about the fact that we've added growth to be a factor in the school letter grade. Prior to that, it was student achievement. So basically, all the letter grade told you was how kids were doing on any given day at mm-hmm. that time. Mm-hmm. What it tells you now is the direction of the school. So what schools are very fascinating, and when you dig in the data, you can find this information, are schools with a pretty low academics or achievement status. So an overall low letter grade, mm-hmm. but if they have an A in growth, what it tells us is that the educators there are implementing whatever strategies they've chosen for their students, and they're implementing it with fidelity and are moving the children in the right direction. Uh-huh. And so I encourage people to go to louisianaschools.com and understand more about your schools. There's data not just on the school performance, but also the makeup, the mm-hmm. student makeup, the teacher makeup, and really helps you understand what is going on in our schools.
How many schools are there in Louisiana?
That's
a lot of work to rank all. I mean, to
we have about 1,300 schools uh-huh. in Louisiana. And so it's not, the purpose isn't as much for ranking as it is for informational purposes.
Yeah, I'm using that word wrong, but I'm thinking it A to F.
Right. It's a lot of information, mm-hmm. Which is why the information typically isn't released until October, November, mm-hmm. because it's based on the previous spring's test.
Right.
And so we go through a process to make sure that we have good data and, mm-hmm. and those kinds of things. So it comes out each fall, and you're able to really get a good sense of how a school is doing.
So I guess, I don't even know if you can answer this, but if a school is located in a under-resourced area where a lot of the kids, you know, qualify for free lunches.
Economically disadvantaged, yes.
Yes. Does any of that get factored in, or do you look just at the grades, as you're saying, the kids' achievement and the growth pattern? Like, are there other factors that go into that?
So the factors in the school performance score are going to be the achievement and the growth. But what you can find by looking at this data is understanding mm-hmm. which schools where you might have higher rates of students who are economically mm-hmm. disadvantaged. What's really exciting for us is that then you can find the schools where there's high poverty but also high performing. And when we get those examples, mm-hmm. Those are the examples that are really important yeah. for us to point to say, one, it's possible. And because mm-hmm. I think, Jan, the saddest part, the saddest mindset that I've experienced mm-hmm. is that not everyone believes all children can learn. And that is the most frustrating and saddest mindset I think anyone can have, because we know all children can learn.
Right. I know when I first heard that, Holly, we volunteered a lot together. I thought people were, I couldn't believe they were serious that they would think that.
Unfortunately, that's the case, and is I look forward to the day when everybody mm-hmm. realizes that all children can learn, and that it's about meeting kids where they are right. and supporting them and giving them what they need to be successful. Mm-hmm. So when we have this data, then we can help highlight, and then also is informative to educators to be able to say, okay, so if a school is very similar with demographics, but one is progressing a lot faster than the other, then educators can have conversations about what's working.
Yeah, what are you
what
doing?
Did you do? Right. How did you make a difference? And I think especially for some of the schools who have historically struggled here in Lafayette, we're able to tell a more nuanced and a richer story mm-hmm. about what's going on, because it's not just that it's a low performing school, but we can tell the direction that they're going. And I really try to encourage especially the principals and teachers to pay attention. Mm-hmm. I struggle with the accountability system because I think some people give it more weight than it actually should have. I think it's important. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely important, and we should provide this information to people. But at the end of the day, we're not going to go put a school's letter grade on a principal's tombstone. Mm-hmm. It's not how we live. And so I think people should use it for informational purposes. I think school districts need to think about what they're doing relative to resources. I don't think an A school and an F school should be looked at the same way. I believe in earned autonomy. If you have a school that's doing really well and going in the right direction, mm-hmm. let them go. Mm-hmm. Let them do what they need to do. If you have a school that's struggling, figure out what resources you need to put in place mm-hmm. to do better and mm-hmm. to really provide the support that they need.
Right, right. Before we started the podcast, you were mentioning with great excitement that we just found out that Louisiana's graduation rate has increased. Would you touch on that topic?
Sure. Our graduation rate in 2012 was 72.3.
So that means that people that start school together, a cohort
yes,
class, it's only 72.3%
were graduating mm-hmm. in the 4 years mm-hmm. with their cohort. So it's mm-hmm. our cohort graduation rate. It is now 81.4. So we are really,
6 years. Yeah.
We are really excited mm-hmm. about that climb in our graduation rate and have a goal of getting to 90% by 2025. So when I say 81.4, I'm excited about the improvement. The same time I think about the other 19% of students who aren't graduating mm-hmm. or aren't graduating with their peers. And we need to provide the supports that are necessary in order to help them be successful. I'm also very excited because we're increasing the credentials that students are graduating with. So, I mean, you think about our world today, it's one thing to graduate with a piece of paper. Right. It's another thing to graduate with a piece of paper in some kind of advanced credential. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's certification to be a welder. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's advanced placement courses for right. English or biology or algebra or whatever mm-hmm. subject areas. And so we are at the point where over 50% of our graduates are getting an advanced credential. Again, that's not enough. We still have the, mm-hmm. you know, other 50% of students to figure out how to get them that advanced credential.
But that's a lot of kids.
It is. Yeah. It is. It is. It's actually the new expectation. So it's one thing just to graduate from high school. It's mm-hmm. another thing to graduate from high school and to be prepared with a certification and credentials to be ready. And
or that's if you're going to college, got some credits under your belt.
College yeah. and career ready. Uh-huh. I have really been able to help by talking to some of my friends who, you know, have asked questions about our higher standards. And one mm-hmm. way that I've helped people understand is that when I graduated from high school, which is not in Lafayette Parish, but not far away, when I graduated from Abbeville High and went to USL, a number of my classmates were in remedial courses. And so that is an indication mm-hmm. that we weren't being successful with mm-hmm. secondary education. That once you get the piece of paper, it should mean that you're ready and you'll be successful mm-hmm. at the next level. And that's what we're continuing to do. We have another goal to support every graduate to have the funding they need to continue their education. So some hot off the press news is that we are number one in the country in FAFSA completion. So that is the federal application mm-hmm. for student financial aid.
Very important.
And so we are number one in the country with completion of FAFSA. And that's because BSEE, our board, has created a policy that it is a graduation requirement. Mm-hmm. We expect schools to support students in getting this documentation completed because that is going to help fund their next step in life. Right. And our families were leaving a lot of federal money on the table by not having mm-hmm. that information.
Because mm-hmm. I think probably most people that get TOPS, the kids that get TOPS knew to fill it out, but not everybody knew that there were other avenues for
that's right.
funding.
And so, we want to help everyone right. successfully move to the next aspect of their life.
Right. Holly, if you don't mind, I want to just take a moment to thank The Advocate. They promote the podcast on Mondays and Thursdays in their business e-newsletter that they send out. And I'm just very grateful to Adam Daigle and the staff at The Advocate that helped me in getting out the word for the podcast. So anybody interested in signing up for their newsletter or seeing what we've posted online at The Advocate, you can visit theadvocate.com. So on that note, thinking about helping others, can you talk some about early childhood and early childhood educational efforts in our state? I know that the higher graduation rate isn't directly attributable to the starting the little people earlier, but this is our big push, right? Because of our where we are ranking in the country. I know there's a big push to get help to little children before they even think about starting pre-K and kindergarten.
That's right. We want our students to start kindergarten ready to learn. And I if you look at the last 6 years and the big jump in graduation mm-hmm. rate, I know it would be hard to make a direct correlation to early childhood mm-hmm. education, but Louisiana has worked over the last couple of decades mm-hmm. to increase access to early childhood mm-hmm. education. As a matter of fact, when I was first elected, Bessie did not have responsibility over early childhood education, what we would have called the daycares. But in Act 3 of 2012, the early childhood centers were moved over to Bessie and the Department of Education. So now we have more responsibility. It's meant to integrate the system. So these centers have been getting federal and state funding for a long time. What we want to do is to make sure that there is a quality that goes along with that offering, right? That what children, the experiences that they're having, the interactions that they're having with adults in these centers before their school age are positive experiences that are getting them ready. And so that includes talking to children, reading to children, asking them questions, helping them to start to see the world. And so we have worked really hard, one, to help get information out about what opportunities, what centers are even out there. So I have a child who is in an early childhood center. And when it came time for me to find a location for her, I was able to use this information and understand what our choices were. This is another benefit of LouisianaSchools.com. So not just that you can find information on our K-12, but you can also find our information on early childhood centers that take public funding. So if a center does not take public funding, their information will not be here. And the public funding comes a lot as a tuition assistance program. So these are going to be families who make below a certain threshold and they get assistance in paying the tuition, which can be very expensive. And so in doing so, for these centers that take public funding, we are really increasing the policies. For instance, their teachers are now getting a CDA. And so this is a child development associates is what a CDA is, a child development associates. And through the CDA, the teachers are learning more about what they should be doing in their classrooms and how they should be planning for the learning of children, all with this goal of students entering kindergarten ready to learn. Because what we find, especially for our students who are economically disadvantaged, is that they come to school with fewer words. And when your vocabulary is smaller, it's harder for you to understand and make sense of the things that you're experiencing at school. And so I cannot overemphasize the importance of families reading with their children, talking to their children, asking questions of their children to really get them thinking, because that's where, that's the beginning of learning. And children bring all of this with them into the classroom, and that's what leads to strong starts in kindergarten.
And then they start out with more confidence too, because they're not failing from the beginning. I think back about what we were like. I mean, I'm much older than you, but when I was in kindergarten, I just remember we played in the sandbox and we started reading and counting and all, but you know, maybe our parents read more though in the back in the day. I don't know.
Well, there were fewer devices, Jan.
So people zero devices.
People were not on their phones. The children, and even today you see children in, you know, I'm guilty of it with my three-year-old that she loves to watch the LPB videos and on LPB Kids. And so it was a busier time. There are a lot of distractions now. And so it is really critical that we are reading with children, that we're talking to children and asking them questions to get them ready. But I don't think that that means in place of play. And as a matter of fact, I'm really excited to share that we started a Teacher of the Year Public Interest Fellowship. This past year was the first year that we had such a fellowship. And Kim Eckert, our 2018 Teacher of the Year, spent her year focused on recruiting people into the teaching profession. So, and has done some incredible work that I can share more information with you so that your listeners can look into it more. And so Kim Eckert did some really exciting work there. But now our public interest fellowship for this year is going to a teacher from Iberia Parish. And she is investigating play in the classrooms and how play can support the learning of the content standards.
Oh, you know, it
and
helps.
So you can, you know, you learn through play. That's how young children learn. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited that she was selected. I had no part in choosing people. That's not anything that I get involved in, but I was excited to see that she was selected because sometimes I think we overcorrect. Mm-hmm. And I think that
it's all serious, like,
yeah,
just too serious.
I don't want to see young children in straight rows with worksheets. Mm-hmm. Learning is fun. We as adults, we learn by doing. Mm-hmm. And I hope to see more children learning by doing.
Yeah.
So it'll be really exciting to see what this teacher discovers. But also, more importantly, it's a public interest fellowship. This work is work that we will be able mm-hmm. to share more broadly with other teachers and just, I think, really support this. It also makes me think about the recess. I don't know if you've followed in the legislature, but there was a...
They're legislating recess?
A bill to require...
Darn.
Well, more recess.
Oh, good.
To call
That's
more
good.
Recess. Yeah. I personally had trouble getting behind it because I don't think we should have too many laws on the books. I think empower people to make good decisions for mm-hmm. our children.
That fits the situation.
Yeah. And then when we start making laws about it, mm-hmm. you know, there's bad weather, but people are legislated, you know, it's legislatively required to have PE. And so I think that gets tricky. Mm-hmm. However, we know brain breaks are a best practice. We know our children need to run and play mm-hmm. and be physically healthy and mentally healthy. And so I think we'll continue to mm-hmm. to figure these things out, but I'm very supportive of sharing best practices. Those schools who are able to fit in their school day mm-hmm. the time for children to run and play and interact with each other, it's definitely something that I'm behind.
I think it's important for all of us, even adults. Sometimes we just focus so much, especially, you know, being at the bottom of the barrel in the country right now. I just hate to see us get too regimented, as you said, because I know teachers already have so many things they have to do to get through their day besides teaching, all the documentation and
everybody
paperwork.
Needs to be happy and healthy and well taken care of order to learn.
I know. You know, when I pass the bar, I look back, Holly, this is a really dumb aside, but we would shoot hoops every day and go through things like the different code courses. And I had a bunch of guys I studied with because there weren't many women at the time. And I'm doing my hands as we're talking. But I still
You're going
remember,
through the motions again. It's
I
muscle
still,
memory.
I still remember those days.
I think there's neurons in your brain that are just firing right now,
Past
Jan.
The bar. But I mean, you know, there was some class. I thought I was moving to Texas and hadn't even taken all the classes. And it was so much fun. Because we weren't really studying. We were just like going over stuff. And,
That's right.
And I'm just grateful to my friends. But it was common sense stuff. And I'm glad to see you.
Learning is
fun.
About
that. Yeah.
Learning is fun. That. We have a new baby in the family. I had a nephew who was born last week. And just watching the movements, mm-hmm. you know. And it's so exciting.
The exploration of, whose feet are those?
That's
you know, whose
right.
hands are these?
And it's learning is fun. Mm-hmm. And if learning's not fun, you're doing it wrong.
Right.
You are doing it wrong if it's not fun. Learning is fun.
Right. Well, let's see. I want to ask you about your consulting work because you're taking your knowledge, you know, your degrees and your experience, and I'm sure experience on the BESSE board, and you founded Ed Talents last year, and you do education consulting. Would you talk about that?
Sure, I will. So BESSE is not a paying job. There's no salary that comes with BESSE and no benefits. Well, we get a per diem, but it's not a paying job. So I am really excited about my consulting. I actually am going to be doing a review of policies and practices of for teachers and leaders. So I was really moved by the quote that every system is perfectly designed to get the results it gets.
Oh.
And when I think about this, actually a mm-hmm. quote from Health Sciences. I would tell you who said it, but that the attribution is disputed.
But whether good or bad.
Every system is perfectly designed mm-hmm. to get the results it gets. So that takes me back to thinking about systems. And when we think about the fact that we do not have enough teachers, especially for our special education, science and math and those kinds of things, it forces me to think about what aspect of the system is not connecting to others in order to get what we need. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's a communication problem. Maybe students in college don't know that while they're majoring in biology, they should go ahead and get a teaching certificate because teaching is the best profession on earth and they might enjoy spending time being teachers. And that, so I think looking at systems and figuring out where mm-hmm. we're falling short of the outcomes we want, mm-hmm. it really pushes us to make a difference. And so, so the perfect education talent system, if we had the perfect education mm-hmm. talent system, we would attract everyone we need into the profession. We would hire them. We would place them. We would develop them throughout their careers. So moving away from this idea of I went into my classroom, I was given a set of keys, and one of the administrators on the staff told me to have a good year. And at the end of that year, now I'm not saying I didn't have help because I had mm-hmm. an amazing mentor that helped my growth. But the same person who told me to have a good year at the end of the year asked for a specific curriculum book back. And when I couldn't find it right away, she said, well, what have you been using? And so, but it was on her. It wasn't on me. She gave me a stack of books. How was I supposed to know that was like the Bible of my first year teaching? But we need to develop mm-hmm. people throughout their careers. I'm sure you're a better lawyer today than you were when you first passed the bar. But we have to have that growth mindset. And so then we also have to figure out how to leverage talent. Mm-hmm. Especially because our schools have such diverse needs. So how do you leverage talent to make sure people are being truly, their talents are being used? Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, we have to retain the best for our students. Because when we think about it, you know, there are going to be kids who will continue to come to school who are unprepared, right? But if they get strong teachers 3 years in a row, mm-hmm. the research tells us 3 years of strong teachers will close the gap. That's the answer. I know people like to talk about facilities. I know people like to talk about curriculum. They like to talk about assessments. But it's the teachers that are the number mm-hmm. one in-school factor that make a difference for kids. And leaders are the number two. So these are the people. And right. my consulting is all about providing the supports and the system in place to mm-hmm. make sure people are successful.
You know, I'm so glad you're bringing all that up. I've always supported facilities improvements. But I know in our own family, our girls went to two schools. They were both nice, you know, very high achieving schools. But one of them, every building you have to walk outside, ESA and CADE. And the kids never even thought about it. They just put on galoshes and these are high school kids too, but off they went. And the academy always had roof leaks and problems, but it was the teachers and the mentoring and the nurturing.
Yes.
You know, teachers, making sure the kids' needs are met.
Teachers are the number one mm-hmm. in school factor that make a difference.
Not that they don't deserve, though, a top-notch facility. I don't mean to say that they don't.
Right. And I don't. I understand facilities are important. Mm-hmm. The most important aspect of a child's schooling is the teachers that they receive along the way. Mm-hmm. There's no disputing it. We all know it as human beings who have gone through education, and the research is very clear.
Right.
So we need to do everything we can to support our teachers so that they're growing mm-hmm. because the children are changing. Our children are coming to school with different needs than right. they had 10 years ago.
Right.
And we have to support people in providing for those needs, because when the children's needs are met, then they're ready to learn. Mm-hmm.
So with Ed Talents, you work with people, schools, and identify what that particular need might be? Is that, if you can close the gap on what it is
that's
that you're doing?
Right. So with districts, ideally, I feel like districts are an incredible unit of change, and then ultimately with schools. Mm-hmm. And so I have received some foundation funding to do my first pilot with a district, and I'm really excited to kick that off with. And hopefully we'll branch out either with more foundation funding here in Louisiana, which would mm-hmm. be incredible, or even going directly to the districts in schools in other states. My Bessie service does make it a little more complicated. I don't want to be going to schools and asking them to pay me to do something when I'm while I'm serving on the state board. So I'll just have to be creative and continue to seek foundation funding or go to nearby states. I told someone earlier today that my dream is 10 years from now, I'm going to be so busy with this, it's going to be hard to get me on the phone.
That's exciting. Congratulations on
Thank
this.
You.
I have a question talking about the teachers being the most important person in a student's, you know, educational career. I saw recently that there was a new law passed that Governor Edwards signed, I think in early June, and it's about suicide awareness and having teachers, I guess, trained on how to identify problems that may be arising to prevent suicide. Would you touch on that, please?
Yes. So suicide is a reality in our society, and it's one of the many aspects of a young person's life that our teachers need to be aware of, and just identifying the warning signs and knowing how to access resources and supports for students can save lives. Mm-hmm. And so we want kids to graduate college and career ready, but most of all, we want our children to be healthy and go on and lead healthy lives.
I know that the teachers, you know, see the kids probably a lot more than the parents and family do, because the kids are at school all day and they can probably see how they interact with their
and
peers.
And watch patterns. Yeah. Yeah, see patterns and changes.
Are they bullied? Are they fitting in? Do they?
Yes.
You
yes.
know, isolate themselves, those kind of things.
And it goes along with this need to continue to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one aspect. I know early in my career, I took a class that helped me to learn what the warning signs were. And it's just important to be able to watch out for our children and get them the help they need.
Right. And then you're helping the whole family when
That's
you do
right.
that. So you have brought a lot of information here, and I know you're a walking textbook on things I haven't even thought to ask you. Have I asked the questions you were hoping to answer, or are there things you'd like to bring up?
I do want to reiterate the LouisianaSchools.com, mm-hmm. which is an opportunity for families to go and learn more about their local schools. Mm-hmm. It is a tool for anyone who's looking to move around to get more information. And so I do want to provide that link, and we can share it, of course. So it's LouisianaSchools.com. Also, just want to emphasize the importance of reading to children and talking to them, that there is the research is really strong. If you have extra time to spend with your children, it's a wonderful way to connect mm-hmm. with them, but also prepare them for future learning down the road. And so, and then say that all my contact information is on our Bessie website. And I'm more than happy to help individual constituents who have trouble navigating the system, who need support. I'm more than happy to provide that
That's
opportunity
great.
And provide
yeah.
that support.
Thank you. Holly, we're here with Jason Sikora from Raider Solutions. And Jason, it looks like you have more questions than normal.
I've got notes. But
he'll listen, and then he'll pick up on things that went right over my head. So,
well, Holly, thank you for being here. And you talk so passionately about mm-hmm. education. And as I was writing down questions, you were actually answering them.
Oh, great.
So like, one of them was advice for parents to get their kids ready for school. And reading, you said, is a huge one.
Reading to children, talking to children. It comes naturally to me because I'm a talker, but with my own son is just verbalizing what I was doing, why. Or mm-hmm. we're about to go to this place. These are my expectations for your behavior. This is why they're my expectations. Mm-hmm. Asking him if he has questions. Mentally preparing children for things. And so I understand for people who are not as, I'm a talker, so it's not surprising that that's what I would do. But you can't underestimate talking children through what you're thinking. Helping them to be more metacognitive mm-hmm. is a way to help them prepare. So reading to those children, talking to them, and getting them ready.
And you're talking about not just little people, but
middle
yes. school.
That's
student.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. All the way up.
One of my other questions that you already answered was when it comes to the success of a student, what's most important? Parents, teachers, infrastructure, administration. And I think you answered that well. The teacher is the most important.
The teacher is the most important in-school factor. But their home environment and their parents determine, can influence how mm-hmm. students do in school. And so that's why families are so important. And I think about it is that, you know, lots of times I'd like to meet families as they're walking out of the door of the hospital with that baby and say, oh, here's a stack of books. Read to them, mm-hmm. read to them, and love them. So families are critical. But when I think about society, and the reason that I am passionate about education is it's the piece that we can control. We can't control what home environments our children live in, mm-hmm. but we can control the quality of education we provide them. And that's why when I think about the way I want to use my life and the way I want to make a difference in our community and in the world, it's with education, because we truly can make a difference.
You're answering my questions as I get through them. My first question was, what drove you to education?
That's a good question. My paternal grandparents were educators.
Okay.
My grandfather died when I was 2. When I was about 7, the local community, so they, I was born in East Texas, and they taught and lived in East Texas. So the local communities, very, very small community, had what was called Pineland Day. And for Pineland Day one year, my grandfather was posthumously honored for his contributions to the community. And so as a child, seeing my grandmother up on stage accepting the award made a difference. So at that, I knew educators make a difference. Educators are to be respected. Mm-hmm. But the most powerful aspect of this award is that my grandmother hung it right next to her back door. So every time I used the back door of my grandmother's house, the award was right in my face. I wish I had the plaque in my own house, because it means so much to me. And so it just communicated throughout my life. And I think that's where I struggle, because not everybody's getting that message. Not everybody knows how wonderful or powerful teaching can be, but it's something that no one can convince me otherwise. There's nothing that anyone could say or do that could change the way I think about teaching, because it was ingrained in me from very early on. So I don't think I had a choice, right? Like, they set me up. The other thing is I believe in genetics. I believe that there are certain traits and dispositions that I inherited from my family that helped make me a good teacher, right? Like being outgoing, loving learning. These are things that I think are genetically part of me. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think there was any other profession for me.
Fair enough. Well, and I like asking that question because my wife's a teacher, and it's always a similar answer. Like, there's just a drive to, like, make a change and be a part of this thing of helping society.
Yes.
The graduation rate increase, what do you attribute that extra 10% to? Or what's the stats? Like, what helped that?
So one aspect from the board perspective is elevating the importance of it in our accountability system.
Okay.
And so you talk about what gets measured gets done. And so the graduation rate is important when you look at the high school accountability. And I think that that's a difference. I also think as a state, we have gotten really clear about what we want to achieve. So we articulate our goals around kindergarten readiness, more students hitting the mastery level in elementary and middle school, and in high school, them having access to college and career opportunities and a funded education after high school. So we're getting very specific. We're not trying to do a million things from the state perspective. We know in the classrooms, teachers have a lot going on. I mean, we've talked about the suicide awareness and those kinds of things. But from the state perspective, we're trying to get very narrow and very specific. And that's strategic, right? Mm-hmm. Strategic work is being clear about what you want to achieve and prioritizing those things. And so I think that's part of the change. And I look forward to 2025 and hitting the 90% mark.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. We could talk for hours. My final question, though, anything that you've worked on or are working on that just, like, super excites you? Any single project?
I'm excited about the educator talent work that I'm able to do through my consulting, because I think about it this way. If we make our school district the best place on earth for teachers to teach and leaders to lead, then I believe it'll be the best place on earth for kids to learn. And so I'm really excited about that possibility of thinking about and pushing for and advocating for systems that take very good care of adults so the adults can take very good care of the children.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here, Holly. I appreciate it. And Jana.
Yeah, thank you, Jason.
Always, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. You know, I meant to ask you about one last thing, Holly, of fishing for memories. I know it's a benefit rodeo for the Alzheimer's Association that you originally started with some friends and your husband, Carrick. And I understand it's transitioning, but would you talk about that?
Yes. So fishing for memories has been a very important aspect of our lives. We've had 11 rodeos. It started in 2009.
Sounds like a country song.
Yes, 11 rodeos. It was such an amazing experience. I did not connect it with education when I first started, right? But then as I started thinking about it, the one thing I'm trying to support everyone in achieving, which is a quality education, can be robbed by Alzheimer's, right? And so to think about attacking it for both ends was very empowering and something we've had a lot of fun doing. We have raised over $300,000 for the cause. We've given away $125,000 to the participants, lifetime licenses to over 40 children. So there are over 40 children out in the community who will not have to buy a fishing license for the rest of their life, thankful to the tournament and the sponsors and everybody who put it on. My husband's grandfather passed away with Alzheimer's. My grandfather has it. It is a horrible disease to watch. And I was with my grandfather this weekend. We are very fortunate. He still has his personality. He still knows who we are. But you have the same conversation every 2 minutes. It's like, it's so predictable. What are y'all doing today? We're going fishing. Oh, did you catch anything? We didn't go fishing yet. And so it's just such a horrible disease. And I am really proud that we've raised awareness, because like a lot of diseases, there are people who suffer in silence. We know the caretakers are the ones who really struggle. I've, you know, my mom and uncle and grandmother who helped take care of my grandfather. It's toughest on them, right? It's really difficult. And so we've been really proud. I can tell you a fishing tournament is a great way to make money in this area, because we have so many people who love it. And I think also promoting the outdoors and a family environment. My son and I were talking about what made our rodeo successful. And I think the being oriented around families and fishing was part of it. So it's been great. We are transitioning it over to Vermilion Catholic and are excited about starting an event in the community. I hope it's so around for my, and for my family to fish. That was the bad part about it, is my husband and son couldn't fish together all these years. So we're looking forward to them being on a fishing team together next year. And Intracoastal City is a place where that's really important to our families. My husband's grandfather was Maxie Pierce. He had a business in that area. He actually had the boat launch and a store and a restaurant. And so we think it's great to bring people back and have a lot of fun.
It sounds good.
Make a lot of memories.
Yeah, congratulations on doing that, because that's got to be so meaningful.
And it has been a very special part of our lives. Yeah. Very special.
And I want to commend you and your family, too. I've had the pleasure of meeting your family, and I know your son is actually an up-and-coming businessman. I know he's a crawfisherman and makes money. Right?
Yes, yes.
And you make him account for his expenses. And
oh, yes,
putting
we
money
do.
Away.
We, work ethic is a very important family value, and our son is going to have a very strong work ethic.
Yeah.
He's actually helping some family today, so we're very proud of him.
Holly Bofi, I want to thank you for taking time to come on Discover Lafayette today. For those of you curious, again, she represents us in District 7 on the Louisiana BESSE Board, overseeing our educational efforts in Louisiana. And Holly, they can just type in BESSE. I'm sure it's easy. B-E-S-E.
LouisianaBelieves.com.
Is that the BESSE Board site?
LouisianaBelieves.com. Uh-huh. And then there's a link to BESSE. Okay. But if you Google Board of Elementary and Secondary Education or Holly Bofi, it's not hard to find us. That's right. There's not a lot of Holly Bofis.
Well, thank you for your service too. I know working as an unpaid servant is never, it's not something you go for, but the rewards I've seen you get from your position have just been well worth it. So
All about making a difference.
I know. Well, look, thank you all, too, for listening. I appreciate the support we get for Discover Lafayette. You can find this interview and all of our interviews at discoverlafayette.net. And please subscribe. You can get it delivered to your phone every week, whether you have an Apple phone or an Android. You can get it through Apple Podcast, Google Play, etc. We appreciate your support. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.